Let's say you just bought a house. Bad news is, you're one step closer to becoming your parents. You'll proudly mow the lawn, ask if anybody noticed you mowed the lawn, tell people to stay off the lawn, compare it to your neighbor's lawn, and complain about having to mow the lawn again. Good news is, it's easy to bundle home and auto through Progressive and save on your car insurance, which, of course, will go right into the lawn. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discount not available in all states or situations.
Your home is important. That's why GEICO helps make it easy to save on condo insurance. Because home is more than just a place. Home is where you took minimalism too far because there's only one chair in your entire condo and your only entertainment is one card. Not even a deck of cards, but a single card. And all your guests have to share one plate and one fork, but you're convinced that less stuff means more freedom. The GEICO Insurance Agency could help protect the overly minimalist broom closet you call home. Call GEICO and see how easy it is to switch and save on condo insurance.
Hi, my name is Ed Boon, creator of Mortal Kombat, and you're listening to This Week in Geek with Mike the Birdman Dodd and the rest of the Twig crew on This Week in Geek.
Destroyed because of this freak. I won't allow it.
These babies just saved this lame fest party.
GEICO presents yet another voicemail from your roommate.
Hi! So, about the kitchen. Turns out, when there's a grease fire, you're not supposed to throw water on it. Who would have known, right? Anyways, the fire department is here, and it's totally cool. Give me a call back when you get a chance.
The GEICO Insurance Agency could help keep your personal property protected, like if danger is your roommate's middle name. Visit GEICO.com to see how easy it is to switch and save on renter's insurance.
Hey guys, what's going on? You are listening to This Week in Geek, otherwise known as Twig. I am one of your hosts this week, Mike the Birdman Dodd, but I'm not alone as we trek down the world that is strange, fantastic, occasionally fucked up. I'm joined with my co-host in Kitchener,
Alex,
and the guy who's literally about 120 feet away from me.
I'm that weird guy upstairs, Mr. Christopher.
It's so weird, but now we've discovered the kind of the awesomeness of recording on Discord. Actually, I remember there was a time where I used to hate this app. Hated Discord with a friggin' passion. Now I can't go a few hours without checking it. We have a Terrible Warriors Discord. We technically have a Twig Discord, but it's just where we record the show. We're just kind of hanging out here. But I check it constantly. So I'm surprised how much this little app has kind of grown on me.
It feels like you can do a lot with it. Like the communities you can build on there, if you're someone who's into streaming, if you're someone who has like any sort of community because you're a content creator, there's a Discord for that. There's always a Discord for everything. It's so much fun to join those communities, talk with people, and even talk to the actual content creator themselves. It's great.
It's like, what if you mix Twitter and the old vent servers?
Kind of, yeah. Yeah, that's a really good way to describe it. Actually, one of the things I really like about Discord specifically is if you're a game developer, the game developers will have their own Discords. You can talk with the devs one-on-one and describe bugs or just talk about how you're excited you are for their game, and they'll respond to you. And it's more intimate than Twitter because Twitter tends to be a lot of noise. Though Discord servers can get into the hundreds, if not thousands, of members, but it never seems overcrowded, if that makes any kind of sense.
I've had servers that I've joined for popular titles like Sea of Thieves, where there are too many people to really understand who's who. But when you go into a server that size, usually there's some sort of organization. So you join smaller niches within that Discord. Like, I'm going to talk in this channel where there's only certain types of these gamers for this game, but there's only certain demographics for that game that want to talk on that channel. So it breaks it down into smaller, more digestible chunks.
Mm-hmm. I use Discord primarily for Dungeons and Dragons for the Terrible Warriors. You can find them over on Patreon. I think it's like patreon.com/terriblewarriors. I run the tip games over there, and I run them over Discord at Justin's suggestion. And at first, I was really nervous, thought it would run like crap. And then I ran a couple games, and I've played a couple games with it, and I'm surprised just how well it works. You can have all sorts of different bots, so it has that kind of IRC kind of functionality built in there with like different bots that can perform different functions and stuff like that. Plus, you can integrate stuff from Twitch. So if you have custom emotes on Twitch, you can bring those over.
Well, I was looking, which is kind of cool. Like, I'm not somebody who traditionally uses, like, this app to me just popped out of nowhere until Justin mentioned it to us. But like, because it's like one of those realms of the internet that I just wasn't familiar with. But what I was looking at today was it has integration for basically everything out there. The I got an Xbox One X the other day, and it integrates with it too.
Really?
Yes. I have no idea what it integrates with, but it asked me, would you like to connect your Discord to it? And I'm like, sure. It can connect with Mixer, which I guess is connected to the... That's probably how it connects to the Xbox, right? Because Mixer is
probably
there. It also connects to Twitter, to your Battle.net account, to even to Reddit.
That's really impressive. Like, I'm surprised how open-ended this software is, and it must have a vast community behind it to just build all these integration tools into it.
Well, and you know, in our case right now, because we're recording with it, we were thinking, like, what is the best way to record, you know, over the internet where we don't compromise too much quality? And the bots that are available for this can record each of us separately, which is amazing, because a lot of times when you find these pieces of software like Skype, it records everybody into one singular mono track. And it's like, well, that's hard to, you know, differentiate people's voices. This way, we actually record it on a multi-track, just like you would at home.
Yeah, and Alex takes care of some of the pre-production of the show, just to peel back the curtain a touch. He'll adjust the individual levels for me and Tristan and himself. And then I go in and edit the show and add in all of the elements then afterwards. So each of us has a hand in editing the show, which is kind of cool, the fact that now... This person, what was originally a one or two person job, is still a one or two person job, but now we can have fine tools with it.
Yeah, as opposed to last time. It automates the busy work and lets us get into the fine tuning.
Exactly. So as we often do off the top of the show, we typically talk about what we've been up to over the last little while. And we're going to start with Tristan. What the hell have you been doing? We haven't had you on the show much due to plague or work or the Borg or whatever. Just what have you been up to?
A little bit of everything just seems to come up and get in the way of me joining the show. Most recently, and you still might be able to hear it a bit in my voice, getting over one hell of a cold. Knocked me out of work for a couple of days, knocked me out of pretty much being alive for a couple of days. It was just about bedridden, sleeping 12 hours a day just to try to get myself better. So that took up a lot of my time recently. I've been working a lot and when I'm not sick. So there hasn't been too much in the way of spare time. But what I do get, I've been playing a bit of World of Warcraft just to get my hands back into there just before the new patch comes out. That's unlocking a couple new allied races, as they're called, new character types to level through and play the game as. So I'm trying to get back into that a little bit, but it is still hard. Blizzard has kind of come down a ways in the last little while, and it's hard to be as into it as I used to be. Otherwise, I've been playing Apex Legends a lot in whatever time I have. Whenever a couple of friends are online, I don't like playing it solo. I prefer to play in a squad of at least two, preferably three. The Division beta was pretty recently, and Division 2 is actually coming out next week, so that's been pretty exciting, and I'm hoping to get into that in the early access. Just need to actually put down the money to buy the game, but that's always the hard part.
And Alex, what have you been up to over the last little bit?
I did some wheeling, dealing, some trading and saving, and got an Xbox One X, which in the last, actually it's been 24 hours since I had it hooked up to the internet. It is still downloading games. So,
jeez, your connection must be, I don't know, because whenever I used to download, my Xbox used to fly.
It's 100 megs a second. It's my bandwidth is I'm actually faster than what it can handle.
Weird.
So it's pulling all, because remember, you're playing on an original Xbox. This is the One X, so it's actually pulling 4K assets.
Oh.
So the games are about 20 to 30 gigs larger. So I have 12 games on there, and it's almost completely filled the terabyte hard drive.
Jeez.
I had played Quantum Break originally, but I heard that there was 4K enhancements. I'm like, sure, I'll check it out. Well, it is about 80 gigs now instead of 50 gigs for the main game, and then 75 gigs for the downloadable offline episodes, because it's the only way to watch it in 4K. You can stream in 1080p, but you can't watch in 1080p, like locally.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, I end up with like 160, 170 gig game. Halo 5, which I want to play, but I want to play through all the originals first, is 101 gigs after it installs.
And then there'll be patches after that.
Yeah, and the Master Chief Collection is like about 100 as well. So just like those three games is like a little over a third of the drive.
Yeah, so you're going to be busy with gaming, and hopefully games that you don't have to review, because playing through the Halo collection can be a lot of fun.
Yeah, we had discussed that we wanted to maybe play through at least the first game together on either easy or normal mode. You said normal because it would be too easy for you otherwise.
I'd get so bored.
I'd love to play through it. Like, now that we've got headsets and everything, we can totally play through it and just have fun a couple hours, like an hour a day even, just to see where we go, because I would love to play with somebody.
Yeah, because I think you'll have fun, especially once you clear the first Halo, and then you get into Halo 2 and 3, and, after that, it gets debatable, but we'll talk about that later.
And other than that, I've been to the movies, so I saw Captain Marvel and Battle Angel Alita.
No spoilers.
Both pretty good. No spoilers, don't worry. Just that the plots are better than you'd expect for both of them.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, there had been some negative press, but mostly... you got different people arguing over whether or not even certain actors should be in the movies, which I find ridiculous.
Yeah, it's fucking so stupid.
And then you actually go see it and you're like, no, this is a pretty good movie. Like, I have no idea. Like, it's, unpopular opinion, and I'll probably get, crucified on the net for this. Captain Marvel's better than Black Panther, like, significantly. So.
I don't know if I'd go that far, but I had more fun when Captain Marvel was on Earth, but I like Black Panther a little bit more as a character, but Brie Larson is Captain Marvel.
You know what it is? It was Black Panther was a little overhyped. People basically made it sound like it was the second coming, and it was a great movie. It just wasn't that.
Yeah, exactly. It's not. Yeah, that's exactly that. I myself have also been once, I've finally been getting out of the house. So I went to go see Captain Marvel on opening night. Actually, you can hear my thoughts on that if you go to nerdtothethirdpower.com. I've joined a new podcast. I'm one of their new weekly contributors over there. So if you want to find more information, you can check that out. I've also been playing a few more video games than I have been recently. In this episode, for example, I get to talk about Toe Jam and Earl Back in the Groove, which is a game I got for the PlayStation 4 for review. And I actually got it because I started talking to the team on Twitter, and I mentioned one of their characters was named after an ex-girlfriend of mine. Though the name is not spelled the same, it's still the same pronunciation, so...
Oh, boy.
Hello, LaWanda. creepy. I'm trying to think what else I've been doing. I've actually been playing Dungeons and Dragons with, like I said, the Terrible Warriors. I've been running them through Ravenloft. They've basically started a rebellion against Strahd von Zarevich, and I have to write that campaign for the Patreons for the next, I think I play in like 2 weeks. And then for Cambridge Chronicles, I've been writing out some stuff, because since Tristan's been sick, it's given me a lot of time to replan and realign some of the campaign goals I wanted to do with that. So
you're welcome.
Yes, thank you, dying immune system. although we do have not quite a firm release schedule, but a tentative release schedule where it looks like we're going to be taking up some of the Terrible Warriors springtime break and summer hiatus time. So there's going to be a whole stream of content coming out when the weather's a little bit nicer. So we're going to get a bunch of content recorded over the next month, 2 months, and you will be entertained. If you're not, die in a fire.
And see me shaking my fist at them.
Exactly. Old like man this. Yells at cloud.
Like this. And if you don't like it, please pretend you like it.
Exactly. Pretend. So anyway, guys, we're going to take a break here on This Week in Geek. We're going to throw things over to our first review today, which is the aforementioned Toe Jam and Earl Back in the Groove. Big thanks to our sponsor of LibrisArcana.com. You can find a little blurb in their Dice subscription for us. So big thanks to John over there. So anyway, guys, without any further ado, this is Toe Jam and Earl Back in the Groove. We are looking at Toe Jam and Earl Back in the Groove from Human Nature Studios, available on the PlayStation 4, Xbox One, the Nintendo Switch, and of course, the PC. I'm looking at the PlayStation 4 version, as that's the version that I was provided for review. So this is a long-running Sega franchise that began all the way back in the 90s, though this version doesn't have anything to do with Sega. This was self-published digitally by Human Nature Studios. And I gotta say, this game was a lot more fun than I was originally expecting. I actually reached out to the team on Twitter, and they were more than happy to give me a copy of the game. They also sent me some pretty cool stickers for my wheelchair, which I will be affixing to it once the weather gets a little bit better. So I don't want to get them all ruined because of the weather and it being wet and everything. But anyway, back to the game. So the game, it's like a funky scavenger hunt would be a good way to describe it. Kind of like an isometric view, kind of like the original ones back on the Sega. And the game takes place across 25 levels as you look for 10 pieces or so of Lamont's Ratmaster ship. So you, your crew, which is Toe Jam and Earl, Letitia and LaWanda, have quote-unquote borrowed the ship to go to Earth. And, well, it kind of blew up when you sucked it into a black hole. And you have to recover the pieces over the course of these 25 levels. Varying degrees of difficulty. You can set this game on stupid easy or super, super hard. There's also modes where you can randomize the worlds, or there's pre-built worlds if you want. One of the really cool things I did notice, certain levels have backer islands on them, so you need to use like spring shoes or Icarus wings to fly over to them, which is how you get items in this game, is something called presents. You would shake a tree, shake a house, go up to a mailbox and buy it or whatever, and you may get an item that will help you or may hurt you in this game. Some of them are cool, like rocket skates or the aforementioned Icarus wings or spring shoes, but you may get ones that cause everybody to attack you, set you on fire unless you jump into water, stuff like that. It's pretty weird. Earthlings are out to hurt you. Some of them, like the Hula Girl, will just cause you to dance. Other ones, like Gandhi, nobody will hurt you as long as he's near you, which is really weird. There's also like random Guitar Hero like dance sections, or I guess Bust a Groove, I guess, if I had to make another older comparison to that. Or you can go into the hyper funk dimension, which still not quite sure how those levels work, but you get money and experience, so not going to complain. It's kind of like a little funky bonus level you can go into. But Toe Jam and Earl Back in the Groove, you can play this local co-op, you can play it online. I didn't get a chance to play it online. Screwed around with it with local co-op with Blair. And it's a simple enough game where you can do that with someone who's not an experienced gamer, because the game is very chill, very, very, very laid back. And that's what I do like about it. There is no combat to speak of. There is no real big difficulty spikes. It's you just wandering around exploring and listening to arguably one of the best soundtracks I've heard in a game in a very long time. The ending song is particularly awesome. Highly recommend you do check that out by beating the game. So anyway, can I recommend Toe Jam and Earl Back in the Groove? Absolutely. I think it's a fantastic experience. It's a wonderful co-op game, and it's something you should be adding to your gaming collection.
Need a new weapon in your battle against evil? Check out LibrisArcana.com for Canada's premier RPG dice subscription service for only $7.97 Canadian with free shipping. You can get a new complete set of role-playing dice from D4s to D20s delivered straight to your door. Dice themes are new each month and can be anything your mind can imagine and beyond. Visit LibrisArcana.com and subscribe for only $7.97 Canadian with free shipping and be prepared to open up new worlds of adventure.
News on the mark.
And welcome back to Twig, your flagship of stupidity. I am Mike the Birdman Dodd, joined with Mr. Christopher and Alex the producer. Let's get going to the news, such as it has happened on the Big Blue Marble this past week. Well, if you are a fan of tabletop role-playing, and I'm guessing if you listen to the show, you probably are, you may be familiar with the live-streaming show Critical Role, which has featured a lot of voice actors from various franchises, video games, you name it, they're famous, they're nerds, they've probably been on the show. Well, last week they launched a Kickstarter. They were seeking to get about $750,000 to produce an animated Dungeons and Dragons special. Well, in just under an hour, they raised $1 million. As of this recording, I'm actually just going to refresh the page right now. This is in Canadian funds. They have reached $9.2 million so far.
That's about just under 7 million US.
And that's with 50,000 backers with 39 days to go. They are talking about putting this, I think they've now agreed because of stretch goals and because they've blown past their original Kickstarter, they're going to turn this into a series. So we will get Critical Role, The Legend of Vox Machinima, and that'll be coming out sometime in the fall of 2020. Now, they have some really cool Kickstarter goals here. You can get plushies, you can get dice bags, you can get playing cards, art prints. If you're willing to throw in some super money, you can be an actual cartoon if you're willing to pledge $5,000. And I think although there are 10 backers who are already signed up for that, there are 5 people who put in $10,000 or more. And it keeps going, and people have paid this. My lord, I am impressed with this, because this blows away previous Kickstarter records as far as I'm aware. Stuff like Veronica Mars, I think, was one of the most successful Kickstarters, raising over $6 million, though it took a little while. I think it took the length of its Kickstarter campaign to push it over, but it did have studio backing. This one is mostly people just throwing money at it. Like I said, it had $1 million in under an hour. It's being produced by the same people who did, I think, Metalocalypse, and the same people who did Netflix's show Big Mouth. It's written by one of the Star Wars writers. I think she did Forces of Destiny, I want to say. I'm just going to double check that. Jennifer Murrow, and the company behind Big Mouth, which is Titmouse. This looks fucking cool, I gotta say. This will be the first D&D animated series we've had in about 30 something years. I mean, there's been one or two D&D direct to DVD movies. I know we had the real D&D movie, and I say that in quotes, back in the early 2000s with Justin Whalen and Damon Wayans.
Jeremy Irons. I love that movie. It's so bad, but I love it.
Oh, same here, where he's like, I'm Profion, ha ta 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 ta. It's so fucking dumb. But it's a great performance, that being said. You have to see it. That I'm really, really, really looking forward to. So your guys' thoughts on this? This is amazing to see the power of crowdsourcing. If people want it, they will pay for it.
I kind of wonder what it feels like just to have... Yeah. 9 times your goal in, 5 days or so? And just
under a week.
Say, okay, here's a budget. Here's what we need to make this project happen. And in an hour, you achieve that funding. And within days, you're multiple times your goal. What do you do with that? Like, obviously, you said they're going to make a series out of it instead. But, like, holy crap. They have to be just out of their minds with joy about this.
Like, to me, this is sort of an evolution. Remember Harmon Quest?
Yep.
It's basically that idea, but done probably on a higher budget.
Significantly. Sorry, Alex, go ahead.
Yeah, no, so I'm interested in it. I'm wondering, if they're going to make this into a series. I'm figuring on sort of if they thought, how much did their initial goal? Was it?
Like, $750,000.
So in all likelihood, they're probably going to, $750,000 was like a bare minimum probably to fund the basic animation overseas or something. And then now that they can do it in-house in the States, it's probably going to be about $1 million an episode is the cost. So if they, let's say, get $10 million or so by, you know, the end of their goal, because generally the majority of people are going to pay for it in the first week of a campaign coming out. Mm-hmm. So I'm guessing they're going to get between 8 and 10 episodes.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be more than what we expected. It's going to be better. And because Critical Role has such a vast lore behind it, they can adapt any part of the story that they want. And I don't know, like, I see, and here's the thing, this makes me a bad nerd. I've not seen one episode of Critical Role.
Neither have I.
And I know people who make this event viewing, but I've watched most of Harmon Quest because I like Dan Harmon. But I think this, like you said, this shows the future of crowdfunding, just what is possible. If people are willing to pay for it, we're going to get pretty much whatever we want because we're speaking with our wallets. We're not getting a lame ass TV show that no one gives a shit about. We're like, we want X. Well, it'll cost this much money. Okay. Bang. Done.
We just have to make sure that they don't make their, go beyond their means. Like, go, okay, well, now let's spend $5 million per episode and then it goes into development hell or something.
Yeah, well, they're promising it'll be released next fall, sometime in the fall of 2020. Kickstarter rewards should start going out in the spring of next year, which is ambitious, to say the least, with 50,000 people to fulfill. But considering the team behind Critical Role, I don't think there's going to be many problems with this process at all, because they can't afford to fail, for one. It's such a high-profile project that any mistakes they will make will be minimal, from what I know of the production. So, looking forward to it. I may go back and check it out because I've had a number of people tell me that, like, oh, hey, it's Thursday night. It's time to go watch Critical Role. So, all right. Why the hell not?
Yeah,
party exactly. On. So, to turn things into something a little bit more of downer news, longtime Jeopardy host Alex Trebek has been diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer. He announced this earlier this week online, saying he vows to fight this and, quote-unquote, intends to continue working during that time because he's contractually obligated for another 3 years. So with a little bit of humor, he intends to keep fighting. He intends to beat this cancer. However, I was talking with my wife and my sister-in-law, who happens to be a nurse practitioner. The survival rate is less than 12%. With his particular type, since it's stage 4, it's less than 5%.
And when you consider his age, too.
Exactly.
For pretty much anybody, his age does play a factor, but pancreatic cancer is one of the most deadly there is, because it doesn't present any symptoms until it's too late. So you don't know something's wrong until there's nothing else you can do. Once it's stage 4, that means it's probably moved into other areas of the body and it's causing problems everywhere. So after 5 years, pancreatic cancer only has a survival rate of 3%, and it's very, very difficult to fight because of how late you catch it. And there's only so much you can do at that point. So it's a deadly disease to have, and I'm wishing all the best for him.
Yeah, like, because this has not been a particularly good time to be a celebrity. I mean, in the last couple of weeks, we've lost Luke Perry. We lost the mom from Who's the Boss. Alex Trebek is, I'm going to guess he's gonna last 8 months to a year.
And the Blair, lead singer from, what was that, The Prodigy.
Yes, something Flint, I want to say his name was.
I feel bad for not remembering his name, but he's
same here.
He was the guy that was the iconic looking guy from the band.
Yeah, the guy with the big mohawk and I'm a fire starter, which I did listen to that recently just to honor his memory. Because I was a big Prodigy fan, especially when they started releasing the stuff for the Hackers movie, which I think was Voodoo People was the big track off that.
That album, the album that had Firestarter and Breathe.
Fat of the Land, I think, was the name of the album.
They had three hits off that album, and it was Smack My Bitch Up,
Breathe,
and Firestarter. They were like, now remember, I'm younger than you, so I was in like grade 4 or 5 when that came out.
Yeah, this was high school for me.
It was insanely popular, even amongst us 10-year-olds.
It's Keith Flint, by
the way. Keith Flint, yeah. I knew it was something Flint. But yeah, it's kind of one of the things I saw online this week is it's causing a lot of Gen Xers and millennials to take a look at their health and stuff like that and starting to realize we're not as invincible as we thought. Our icons are starting to pass away. Unfortunately, Keith Flint was from an apparent suicide. The other people passed away from old age. I know another star of the 80s television show, Airwolf, Jan Michael Vincent, passed away this week, I think at age 72. So it's only a matter of time before time, the inevitable enemy of all of us, catches up, or various health conditions catch up with us. So
it sounds bad, but I guarantee you there's going to be an uptick in the ratings of Jeopardy.
Jeopardy?
For the next
one. Oh, absolutely, because you don't know when his last broadcast is
going to
be.
And the thing is, he's not going to be somebody who announces, I'm leaving at this time, unless the network says you have to leave at a certain time. So you're just going to have to keep watching till one day he says, this is my last show.
Yeah. It's unfortunately it's an unscrupulous move, but it's the world of television is cutthroat, and ratings and advertisers is what it matters at the end of the day, which is unfortunate. Moving on to our next story, this one comes to us from Forbes.com, and it speculates that a discless Xbox, which is speculated to be released probably before E3, may further the demise of GameStop, because GameStop relies on a lot of physical sales and used sales to make most of their money. But with a discless Xbox that relies purely on digital downloads, cuts out the middleman. And I, myself, as a gamer who relies primarily on digital, just because I don't like going to the store, I don't like having my wife get up and put my disc inside the console because I'm in a wheelchair and I can't get to it all the time, it's a convenience factor for me. Plus, having my games in the cloud, I don't mind, but those licenses can expire, those licenses can change, as you've noticed with Xbox Live Arcade titles. Sometimes the license gets lost, and you can always download it, but you may lose the ability to purchase it. Like, for example, say TMNT Reshelled was taken off of the PSN store, or Scott Pilgrim versus the World, or
Transformers Devastation.
Transformers Devastation in the Activision deal, yes. So what do you guys think about this? GameStop going further into the dirt.
Well, see, here's the thing. It's going to be GameStop in the States, but it'll be probably similar in Canada, where Toys R Us is still running strong here. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be a thing of scale. They have so many stores in the States that they probably can't support them all. Whereas in Canada, you've got maybe 100 stores. You think maybe there's 100 GameStops? Or
maybe I'd say maybe at the high end, 150.
At the very most.
Yeah,
because I mean, like we're in a populated center. You've got two in your city. There are, I think, five or six in Kitchener. No, maybe 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah, 6 or 7 in KW Cambridge. So there's between our regions, there's 10 stores, but that's for like nearly 750,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
So if you average it like that, Toronto's probably got like 30 or 40 locations, but then the rest of the country, it's sort of spread out. I think it's not going to be as big of an issue here. Now, personally, I just picked up that Xbox One X because I was like, okay, I want the highest end gaming experience I can. Plus, it'll give me more trade value whenever they announce the new system coming out, probably in this year, maybe next year at the latest, because they already said they're going to be talking about the new or the next Xbox at E3 this year. So I was like, okay, well, let me get the best Xbox experience I can currently get now. Plus, I could eliminate the need for a 4K Blu-ray player because it has a 4K disc drive built in. Well, if they're removing that drive, you know, right now I got that the Fallout 76 bundle where they discounted it by $150 because nobody wants that game. But in reality, like, if they release a discless Xbox, it better be like $150. Because you reduce the ability for the system to play any movies, CDs, any 4K stuff. Like, they're taking
out... What about digital downloaded 4K stuff?
It'll play that digital, but most of the downloads in the store are not 4K downloads. They're 1080p.
Okay.
So the ability, you remove the ability to play, like, it's 50% of the media that you're getting. You're also going to have issues where, sometimes it's just a lot better to have it on disk. Like, it installs a lot of the data to the drive, but if this diskless system does not come with a 2 terabyte drive, they're basically saying you now have to spend $200 to buy like a 2 or 3 terabyte drive to use externally.
Yeah, because I have a 2 terabyte drive hooked up to mine and I'm like 80% full.
And like I said at the beginning, I got like between 12 and 15 games installed and I have like 80 gigs left out of the terabyte drive they give you. Considering that it's an X, I should have had a 2 terabyte drive in there. But they do that to save money. They put a 1 terabyte in when they could easily put a 2. But they're going to have to. They're going to have to be some reason, you know, like, because otherwise, if they release it and they say, okay, instead of being $299 for a slim, it's $199, it's like, but that $100 is not worth it. Because if you want a 4K Blu-ray player, it's $200 to $250 alone to buy that. It's always been a great value to get an S or an X because it has that built in.
Mm-hmm.
If you release a completely diskless version, it better be like the size of a Nintendo Wii. You know, like, they better shrink it down so that it's like tiny and be like, oh, wow, look, a really compact Xbox that plays all my games.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of surprised we haven't seen anything leak yet, like in terms of pictures, at least.
Yeah, exactly. And not to mention, like, if they're going diskless, they're trying to promote their streaming service, right? That they want to have, like...
Xbox Game Pass, right?
Yeah, well, Game Pass and the one where it does all the heavy streaming on their end.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of downloading, like, 80 gigs to your system, you download 2 gigs for a launcher, and then just like WoW or any other game, it does a lot of server-side stuff. So, like, sort of like how PlayStation has PlayStation Now.
Mm-hmm.
It's that deal. And they're doing that to try to compete with Google, who just, I think it was a couple days ago at, there was a conference overseas, and they showed off the controller they're going to be using for their service.
Because I think that conference is on the 20th of this month, I think. Something like that.
Yeah, they already showed off what the controller is going to be, so they're trying to get ahead of the curve, I think, and go, hey, we can compete with this, but if Google ends up coming out with what rumors are that they're coming out with, it's going to kill the Xbox diskless version anyway, because you wouldn't have to buy any hardware.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be a thing. This is sort of something where I feel Microsoft is getting into Sega categories of, hey, we've got 6 different versions of the same system. Like, this is like the 32X plus the this plus the that. Like, it's too much for people to understand. Like, unless they go, hey, we're discontinuing the Xbox and we're only going to have this diskless version, they're going to shoot themselves in the foot.
I'd like to see how GameStop's going to react to this, simply because what's the incentive for them to sell it? And with GameStop failing to find a buyer last month, they're already in shit.
They'll do, I guarantee you, this is what they'll do. If they do carry it, it'll be, okay, well, you can buy digital codes here. Like, they'll print the code on the receipt for you.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll go, okay, so trade in your games and we'll put credit on, and you can pay for your digital code with credit.
Yeah. I can see. I think they do that now, don't they?
Some things. But the thing is, they do that for some PC games and some digital things. The issue is going to be, is like, they're going to amass this vast stock that nobody can play.
Hmm.
So, like, you can trade in games, and then they'll just sit there. Because if everybody buys a diskless system, it's like, what's the point of having the game?
Yeah.
So it's going to benefit Nintendo. Or basically, they're going to sell more Nintendo and PlayStation products.
Yeah.
So Microsoft wants to go to a subscription service where you basically pay a monthly thing and they can guarantee whatever money they get. They will ultimately get less money in the long run doing a subscription, but they get steady guaranteed money that they don't have to constantly have analysts, you know, trying to figure out what their stocks are going to be.
Yeah. So I guess closing thoughts on this, Tristan?
I can see EB Games pushing themselves more towards the other aspects of gaming, like they already have started doing. When you walk into an EB Game Store, which, by the way, there are 316 of in Canada, I looked it up, you'll find two-thirds of the store is just full of merchandise related to games and not so much the games themselves. Yes, that's what they... The used games is what they make most of their money on, but I can see them focusing more and more on plushes and
toys, basically, pops, right?
Pop figures and board games and other merchandise that's related to gaming, but isn't actually necessarily the games themselves, because that's been less and less possible for them to do with the rise of digital sales. I'm a PC gamer myself. I don't buy physical copies of anything. It's actually harder for me to find a physical copy of the games I want to play on PC than it is a digital one. They're just not out there anymore.
Well, yeah, like about 5-6 years ago, EB stopped carrying most PC games. They'll carry like a AAA title for like a week, and then it's gone. Whatever doesn't sell in that, whatever isn't pre-ordered, basically, they don't carry. And that was a thing they were doing a long time ago because they only want to carry product they could have traded in, at least game-wise. So
yeah, I never quite considered that there is no used PC market, which I always found a little strange. But
I mean, there used to be back in the day before copy protection.
Yeah, before like CD keys and everything.
Yeah, before it was like activate once. Basically, Steam killed it.
So moving on to our next story, this one is yet another bummer of a story. Recently, there was a HBO documentary called Leaving Neverland, which is points at the allegations of sexual abuse from pop star Michael Jackson. Well, Simpsons executive producer James L. Brooks has made the call to pull the classic episode from The Simpsons featuring Michael Jackson, which was called Stark Raving Dad, where Michael Jackson had an uncredited voice role as, I can't remember the name of the
Leon voice. Leon Komposki.
Yeah, that was the name of the character. He was credited under a different name officially for the voice role, but yeah. So, according to this, Simpsons brass has already begun the process of removing the episode from their syndication circulation, but it's going to take a while to scrub from DVD and streaming services. So if you have the Fox streaming service Simpsons World, I wonder if it's still there now.
If it's anything that they have direct connection to, it'll be gone already. But the DVDs, you'll never get rid of it, because remember, The Simpsons was releasing seasons on DVD, you know, back almost 20 years ago when... You basically, your options were Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Star Trek The Next Generation, and X-Files, and then Simpsons. So, like, there's literally millions of copies out there, so they can never get rid of it. You just won't get anything in HD.
Yeah. According to the Wall Street Journal, Matt Groening and producer Al Jean were in agreement with James Brooks to produce, to pull the episode. They said, there were a lot of great memories we have wrapped up in that one, and this certainly doesn't allow them to remain. I haven't seen the Leaving Neverland documentary. I actually plan to watch it later on tonight. Thank you, HBO Go. And I gotta say, it's weird, because a lot of radio stations are now having this conundrum. Do we pull the Jackson catalog from the playlists? And obviously, I'm not defending Michael Jackson here, because the allegations, you hear them enough, and you're probably going to go one way or the other with it. And it comes down to that classic question, can you separate the art from the artist? So I open this question up to the floor.
My thing, personally, I go, it should be available. Like, it's what's in demand. If there's enough people calling and saying, hey, I'd like to listen to Thriller.
Yeah.
I mean, then play it. Or, you know, don't pull it from complete catalog. Maybe pull it from over-the-air stuff that's just, you know, out there that anybody can listen to. But there's no reason you have to pull it from, like, Google Music or iTunes or
Spotify
like
or something.
You know,
like
if
that,
you
yeah.
want to seek it out yourself. And then, you know, if it's an all-request radio station, then... People keep calling in. There's no reason not to play it, because it's about public consensus. Don't just assume people shouldn't or don't want to hear it.
Yeah, it kind of makes me think of that radio controversy we heard late last year, where people were complaining about Baby It's Cold Outside, saying it was a rape culture song.
That's such a joke. I'm sorry. Grow up. You're telling me that we have to... Basically, you're saying we have to change history because history doesn't suit us.
Well, it's one of those things where I look at it. I look at the time in which it was written and the time it's being analyzed in now. Like, there's one article I saw on Facebook, and it was, people are super offended at Ace Ventura Pet Detective. I can see where they're coming from, but at the same time, comedy evolves, sensibilities evolve. Unfortunately, with the Michael Jackson situation, it's not like we can take the guy to court any further because he's dead. But as you said, if the people wish to consume it, they should be allowed to. And I'm in fully agreement with that. You should be able to seek it out if you wish. As a radio person, I could see this getting pulled from playlists or at least put into the radio vault, as they say, for at least quite some time. I don't think you're going to hear Beat It or Billie Jean anytime soon. You want a copy of Billie Jean? Weezer just did a cover of it off their Teal album, so there's an option for you.
And you know what? He didn't write most of his own music. He would play around, but these were like Quincy Jones and other people writing for him. So, you know what? It's like, I'm going to punish it because I don't want to hear music he wrote. Well, he didn't write most of his songs completely himself.
Yeah, he was just a performer.
He would contribute, you know, here's like, I got a melody, and he would play it, and they go, okay, well, then they would produce it and overproduce it, blah, blah, blah. But it's similar to The Cosby Show. I fucking love The Cosby Show. But am I going to buy the DVD even if it's $20 for the full series anymore? No, because I have a hard time looking at it knowing what he was doing behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. So that's the thing. Like, and I, you know me, I'm pretty open. I'll joke about anything. Nothing's off limits for me personally. But when I watch it, I'm like, I don't feel so good about watching that. So I understand why they pulled it. But they didn't pull the DVDs from sale. You can still buy them, and it's like $30 for all 8 seasons or whatever it is. So if you choose to buy it, you can choose to buy it. It's just they're not going to show it on like public broadcast television for people.
Yeah, it'll be pulled from syndication circles. Any thoughts on this, Tristan?
It's taking him out of circulation is probably what's going to happen pretty much everywhere. But I think, like it's been said, it's important to have that music being accessible to the public. If you want to go and find it, you need to be able to go and find it. And I'm kind of just parroting what's been said already, but I really agree with it. It's it almost comes down to a matter of censorship. Do you really want to censor that music existing just because of something that someone did in relation to it? It's just one part of a much larger project. It's an art form. Music is an important part of our culture. Locking that part of culture away is doing a disservice both to the actual people involved with it and just history as a whole. It's I don't know, it's a touchy issue. Anytime
it's messy.
Yeah, anytime these allegations, this type of allegation comes up, it calls into question a lot of what that person has done in their entire life. It usually ends their future, but in this case there is no future, of course, because he's passed on. But what do we do with the legacy that's there? Is it's tainted now, but is it destroyed? Is it something that you can't look at the good parts of? Is it something that's now going to be a taboo?
We're living in the now culture, because reality is every 5 or 10 years, this sort of thing with him would come up. And you remember, what was it, early 2000s when the...
Barbara Walters interview or whatever?
The Bashir thing, what was it, where he spent like 2 weeks or something at his house and documenting him. And he basically showed off that Michael Jackson had the mentality of like a 12-year-old boy. He was clearly had arrested development. So... Mm-hmm. Was it Martin Bashir, the guy that did it was a series of documentaries that they put out right around the time his trial happened, his second trial. And it's like, there was outrage then, but now people tend to forget. Like, if it's not happening currently in the news, then they're not outraged about it. Then something gets brought up and it's like, oh God, the world's ending. It's like, there's nothing different about these documentaries or this Leaving Neverland that we didn't hear about before. It's just now people are so riled up about everything that they're making it into a bigger deal. It's like, if this had come out 15 years ago, you wouldn't be getting this reaction now. Even though people would still be upset, it's just everybody pulls the plug on everything now because they're just terrified of how things are perceived. Well, you know, maybe that's a good thing, because but in my mind, if this was the case, his stuff should have been pulled 20 years ago. So, like, I'm just like, what's next? Who's next? Right? Like, are they going to pull every Barry White song because it's about having sex with women?
Yeah, it's true. There's so many things that will be under the microscope in the next few years. And you're not wrong, Alex, when you say, who or what's next. I guess we'll have to wait and see. But that's going to do it for this edition of the news so far. So we're going to throw things over to my review of, what are we looking at here? We're going to take a look at a role-playing game I took a look at, which will definitely be a lot lighter than the topics we've dealt with in this news. We're going to take a look at Teenagers from Outer Space from R. Telstorian Games. We'll be back, guys, right after this with the weird news. We'll be back right after this. We are looking at Teenagers from Outer Space, a role-playing game from R. Telstorian Games, which describes itself as the anime comedy role-playing game, the total anime silliness in a world of teenage manga mutants. And you know what? That description is not entirely wrong. This is a game that I've had a chance to look over the past couple of weeks, but though I've only really cracked into it over the past week or so from Alex. And this game, it's weird. It's pretty friggin' weird to describe it. Now, I should preface this. I haven't actually played a session of this. I've been reading through the rulebook pretty extensively over the last week or so. And from what I can tell, this game, easy to learn, not hard to master. Once you get the basic hang of it, basically, you really only need 2d6 for this game at most. But it basically boils down to your roll, so that's 1d6 plus a relevant stat, and maybe you add on another modifier to that, and then your referee will assign a difficulty number, typically 1 to 10. Basically, 1, be like, walk across the street. 2, beat Alex Trebek at Jeopardy. Something like that. The book is definitely dated. You can tell this definitely comes from an era of roleplay writing, and the setting is probably about late 90s to early 2000s, as they still talk about VCRs and stuff like that. There's a lot of pop culture in here that's definitely dated, but it's a nice reference to a simpler time in role-playing game development, which I do think is actually to this game's value. I think it's definitely a nice slice of history of the industry. And R. Telstorian Games has definitely given you an interesting system and world setting to play around with. The setting for this game, such as it is Earth is the most happening place in the universe, and for some reason, aliens have come to Earth to just live. They want to hang out. They want to be a part of things. They want to go shopping in our malls, eat our pizzas, hang out with our celebrities, and just be a part of our society. And you can either play as a teenager from Earth, or you can play as an alien or a near human or a near alien or even weirder things. You want to be an anthropomorphous blob? You could do that in theory. Though your cool will probably suffer for that. Stuff like that. It's really strange. I really like the idea behind this because it makes me think of anime like Project Eiko, where you have the superpowered girl fighting people in robot bikini mecha battle suits, or stuff like Weird Science from the 1980s where they invent like a dimensional portal and somehow cavemen and dinosaurs get warped into the present. It makes a lot of sense if you really think about it, but it also doesn't make any sense if you really, really, really think about it. And I think that's where this game has its strength. It's really simple to learn, though the examples are buried in paragraphs sometimes. So for you to get the hang of the system, you have to jump between a few different sections of the book. But once you learn it, it's remarkably simple, and I really, really, really do like it. I was actually saying to Blair, my wife, I could teach this to you in about 5 minutes. Now, this is where I think things are going to get a little bit complicated. As you play this game, the game definitely wants you to ham it up to be very silly. They want you to use weapons like popcorn grenades or stuff like that. And that's another thing I should probably mention. Combat in this game is dealt with something called bonks. Bonks is basically typically how many hits your character can take before they're taken out of an action or a scene, more or less. And you can never die in this. You basically might get scorched and you get like the whole kind of Looney Tunes just set to like a blackened skate of like, oh look, I am on fire and yet I'm not dead sort of thing. So think of it very cartoony, or you might have the big anime teardrop appear beside your head, that sort of thing. Definitely not meant for serious role-playing. Pathfinder and D&D, this is not. Not necessarily my style of game. However, I could see this being really fun on a convention weekend. If you were to take this game to any number of anime conventions, I could see you taking any number of classic anime and adapting them. If you wanted to have My Hero Academia run in this system, I could see that working, actually. Or if you really wanted to play something ridiculous like High School DxD, I could see that working in this system. So, can I recommend Teenagers from Outer Space? It's going to depend upon your group's playstyle. If you're the more serious dungeon delve, I want an epic story where we're discovering the lands of Numenor or something, then probably not for you. But if you want a game that's a fun one-off for a convention weekend or something for your group just to try, then you can find this in any number of different places, such as the R. Talsorian website or drivethroughrpg.com. Welcome back to Twig. I am one of your hosts, Mike the Birdman Dodd, and I'm here to bring you the weird, the wacky, the just plain fucked up from around the world, such as it is. I'm joined with Mr. Christopher and Alex, the producer. So, which one of you guys has, I don't know, 10 grand lying around you don't know what to fucking do with?
Oh, if that was did, I would be, I would be like living in a trailer or something. I would buy a trailer, even if I didn't use it, just because I could have like a geek trailer.
Could I interest you in a 1975 AMC Pacer with a giant metal hamburger on it, perhaps? The Burger Mobile from the 1990s seminal classic, Good Burger?
Can I sound like a young person and say I've never heard of that movie before? Actually, that's not true. I've heard of it. I've never seen it.
I've seen it once. Anyway, if you want to buy this car, it's only going to cost you $10,000, and it only has 999,000 miles on it.
It also looks like a rusted up piece of shit.
Yeah, it's a piece of junk. Holy crap.
Yep. If you are willing to go to Daytona Beach, Florida, you can find this from somebody who bought it they won it in a raffle after the movie's release 12 years ago. So the seller named Carl Spiel said his father bought it off someone who I think won it in a contest after the movie's release 12 years ago. This car used to look cool.
You mean somebody sold it 12 years ago?
Yeah, sold it 12 years ago, and it's been sitting in what looks like the back of somebody's house on a trailer, just rotting and rusting. It hasn't run in years.
Think about this. That's down in the South where they don't salt the roads, and it still looks like shit. So who knows? It's probably got like dead raccoons in it and everything.
And I think it's the same model of car as the Wayne's World car, actually. I was looking at it a little bit closer.
Something out of an apocalypse film. Like, it's perfectly rusted where there's just little hints of what it used to look like, and the burger looks like it's been sitting out too long, and everything's all gray. And just fucking nasty car.
I want this to be my Mad Max vehicle, though. The Burger Mobile. You know how awesome that would be? Witness me!
It looks much more like it's something out of like Escape from New York. All it needs is like chandeliers with candles on it and barbed wire.
The burger wrapped in barbed wire. That actually would be pretty amusing, and a hint of things to come later in this show. The next weird story that I have is Mark Zuckerberg wants to bring Facebook to build a mind-reading machine. He was talking at Harvard University, and he was talking about what he wants Facebook to do, and he wants to create an augmented reality where basically there's no typing or speaking, no way to distract you as you interact with digital additions to the landscape, driving instructions superimposed over the freeway, short biographies floating next to attendees of a conference, 3D models of furniture you can move around your apartment. And someone at the conference had said, the Fifth Amendment implications are staggering. Presumably, this would be something that someone would choose to use as a product. Because if this thing can read your mind without you having to say, please go to application X or whatever, saying it out loud or gesturing, it just knows what you want to do. I can see this being a significant breach of privacy.
I'm wondering if he's doing this so that he can finally understand people's emotions.
Well, I've heard him be called a lizard person before. He also wants to establish its own Supreme Court. He says he wants to, and I quote, he wants to establish an outside panel entrusted to settle thorny questions about what appears on the platform. I will not be able to make a decision that overturns what they say, which I think is good. I don't know, man. Facebook.
What Zuckerberg is saying there about not wanting to have that much power in himself and instead entrusting it to the Supreme Court, I think it's a good idea. I don't know if his intentions are altruistic, but on the surface, that sounds like a good idea.
I don't know. The more time I spend on Facebook, and that's my primary way of communicating with people, interacting with fans, interacting with family and whatnot. I don't know, man. If it weren't for about 30 or 40 people, I think I'd leave. I'm getting to the point where I'm just getting sick of all the arguing. I'm getting sick of all the data privacy breaches. Zuckerberg, it's always something with this guy. He's basically discount Lex Luthor at this point. I mean, him and Elon Musk should never be in a room together. Because I can only imagine what terrifying technological terrors they would unleash upon the world.
I'm picturing this like Spectre meeting where it's all of them at a table and like the only good billionaire that's trying to stop them is like Richard Branson or something.
Or Bill Gates, Bill maybe.
Gates. Bill Gates is a good guy.
No, sorry. Branson is actually the head bad guy. He just pretends to be good. So it's literally just it's Bill Gates and Warren Buffett like paratrooping in to stop them.
Gates and Buffett versus the world.
Coming soon to a theater. Can we kickstart that Netflix series? I'd watch that.
it's like Contra, but the character sprites are Bill Gates and Old Man Buffett.
And there has to be a reference to Hank Scorpio in there somewhere, because that's what I picture when I picture an evil billionaire. Zuckerberg, you lizard reptilian alien. Speaking of aliens, are you aware there's a Nigerian astronaut stuck in orbit and he's $3 million to come home? There's a scam going around right now where the subject line is Nigerian astronaut wants to come home. And it's this African name that I can't pronounce. But the gist of it is he went up to space in 1979 in secret. And he's been on a Soviet space cruiser since 1990. And since then, he has accrued $15 million in flight pay. But he needs someone to loan him money to get it out of a trust so he can come home.
I can see where this is going.
Let me see. I'm going to read you part of it. Let me see. If we can obtain access to this money, we can place a down payment with the Russian space authorities for a Soyuz return flight to bring him back to Earth. I am told this will cost $3 million American dollars. In order to access his trust, we need your assistance. Blah, blah, blah. Needless to say, the trust reposed on you at this juncture is enormous. In return, we agreed to offer you 20% of the transferred sum, while 10% shall be set aside for the incidental expenditures, internal and external, between the parties in the course of the transaction. You will be mandated to remit the balance of 70% to the other accounts in due course. Please respond to this number, and there's literally a Nigerian phone number here, but parts of it are taken out, so we can't call this guy. There's a friend of mine. His name's Tom. And he got a hold of one of these Nigerian scammers once. And it was this woman saying, "Oh, I need your help. I am trapped behind enemy lines," or something like that. "And if you send me 50 American dollars, I will give you 2 million and we can be together." So he sent her a picture of the Human Torch Chris Evans from a Hollywood premiere. This conversation went on for 6 months as he lived as Johnny Storm, and she would write back actually expecting him to send money, and he would reply as, "Oh, I'm sorry, I haven't had a chance to reply. I was out with Reed fighting Dr. Doom in the Fantasticar. I'm surprised you didn't see it on the news, but don't worry, honey. I'm okay." And this went on for, like I said, 6 months. And he's posted it online somewhere. And it's a marvelous tale. But this is a new one. "I'm trapped in space. Please send me $3 million to come home."
It's the Nigerian prince scam, but it's just evolved into current technology. Here's my favorite part of this. The whole concept is that there's this guy in space who has $15 million in a trust They need you to send $3 million to them so that they can, you know, give you $15 million, but you've agreed to only 20% of that transferred sum. You're going to have to transfer the rest out, which is $3 million. So even in this whole thing, you aren't going to make any money, even if it was real. It's just zero sum.
You lose, sir. Good day.
So what the hell is the point of the whole thing at all? It's not like it's okay. Like, we're going to give you the $15 million if you give us $3 million now, which is what it usually makes itself out to be. No, this is here. Give us $3 million now and we will give you $3 million. Okay.
But we are going to bring home this Nigerian astronaut who I'm sure is enjoying his 15, like, he's been out there since 1990, allegedly, which is hilarious. 30 years.
Wait, they could afford to send him food and somehow, I guess when he comes back to Earth, all his bones are going to crush under the gravity.
Oh, yeah. He will be like a starfish when he comes home.
Ew.
Ew. It's disgusting. It's horrible. It's gross. Mental image. So from Nigerian astronauts to the Burger Mobile and the Zuckerberg Reptilian Complex coming soon to you, that's been the weird news this week here on Twig. Though we're going to throw things over to Satan's Pantry as we continue our look at the Elder Scrolls cookbook. And this week we take a trip to the land of Morrowind and we take a look at salt rice porridge. We'll be back right after this right here on Twig, your flagship of stupidity.
Wonderful! Time for a celebration! Cheese for everyone!
I used to be an adventurer like you. Then I took an arrow in the knee.
Oh yes! Yes, the kindly stranger.
I've been waiting for you to return to consummate our love.
Let me guess. Someone stole your sweet roll.
Welcome back to Satan's Pantry right here on Twig, where we decide to take a look down the devil's grocery aisle of your local big box retailer. But for the next few weeks, we're doing something a little bit different. Big thanks to our friends over at Inside Editions, specifically Eric, who gave us a chance to take a look at The Elder Scrolls, the official cookbook. Recipes from Skyrim, Morrowind, and Across Tamriel. This book is by Chelsea Monroe Casile. You can buy this book on Amazon for about $30, $32 right now. It's on pre-order. You can get the book actually on March 26th, I do believe. So last time on the show, we took a look at one of the most iconic desserts across gamedom, and that was the sweet roll. But we're going to do things a little bit differently on this edition of Satan's Pantry, and we're going to take a little bit of a trip across Tamriel and go to the volcanic area of Morrowind and the Dark Elves, the Dunmer. We're going to be trying something that's sort of a breakfast over there, I believe, and this is called salt rice porridge. Now, I've always wondered what the hell porridge is for a number of years. I just thought it was fancy oatmeal. But evidently, I am quite wrong. Now, this is the second time I've had this. Blair actually made this for me as a surprise breakfast one day a couple of weeks ago. But now I get a chance to try it here on the show. Plus, she's also decided to fancy it up for Alex, who's also here with me, and Blair, who prepared this just before the show. So, I guess without any further ado, we're going to try the salt rice porridge. Mine has been dressed up with some toasted coconut, some trail mix, some nuts, and honey as well.
And mine has the coconut on it.
All right, so I guess without any further ado, let's give this a try. Now, this is served hot.
It is. It's warm.
Yeah, it's very warm, so hopefully I don't burn my mouth on this.
Well, that's good. I don't know how to describe it.
Kind of like a rice pudding.
It's like rice pudding, custardy, like a coconut custard rice pudding.
This would...
Basically, it is a hot rice pudding. Basically, you think of it's kind of not overcooked rice, but more, it's like a sweet risotto is basically how I would describe it. It does take quite a long time to make, as just like as a risotto, you're trying to put a little bit of liquid in at a time and let it reduce slowly. So it does take quite a long time, but the recipe is very easy to follow. The pictures are wonderful. And obviously, we quite enjoy the taste.
Now, as I'm eating this, I'm trying to figure when would be the perfect time to actually eat this. This would be wonderful to have if you were just coming inside from a really cold day of shoveling snow.
Yeah, or if, let's say, on like a Saturday or a Sunday, you had your family over, this would be the breakfast you'd serve.
Yeah, like this is a great meal to kind of gather people around. I mean, this is something, as Blair said, it does take a fair amount of effort, but it is easy to follow. But it's really, really good. Really, really good. And from the game perspective, not something I'd picture a Dunmer elf exactly doing. But gotta say, them elves definitely got some tasty choices in breakfast foods.
So far, it's two winners. I'm almost hoping in my mind, like, let's have a stinker, one that we really don't like. But I don't know if we're gonna find one we don't like in this book.
There is more than a few that Blair has said. I don't know whether I want to do that. There's one I really want to try, and maybe we'll do it as a special during the summer. And it's called Horker Loaf. It involves clams at one point.
Clams and
venison or something.
You want to see Alex turn inside out in green? Clams.
See, I'm looking forward to something like that because I really enjoy seafood. But
seafood, but clams, they'll get to me. I know they will. It won't be anything to do with the recipe.
Clams just don't agree with you.
Yeah.
So anyway, salt rice porridge is definitely another winner here from the Elder Scrolls official cookbook. Once again, you can find this on Amazon.ca, Amazon.com for about $30, give or take. And we'll have more recipes coming up next week, as I believe we're trying a leek and cheese crostata on the show. So stay tuned for that. We'll be back, guys, right after this.
My pen is mightier than swords, it's the right choice. They call me MF Doom and I use my voice. With each rap, my speech craft keeps stacking. If you could see the graph, you'd actually be laughing. You'll never sound as fresh, I'm a rock star. I climb the 7,000 steps to high Hrothgar.
This past weekend really sucked because we had freezing rain, then snow, and 80-kilometer winds. So I didn't really want to go out and do anything, but luckily, the Friday beforehand, in the afternoon, I received a package in the mail from Mill Creek, and lo and behold, I had Barbed Wire on Blu-ray for the first time. Now, I had never seen Barbed Wire before, so I had seen it in the video stores, basically the corner store I would pass by in, you know, my childhood. Every single week, I saw Barbed Wire on the shelf. It was always rented for the most part, so it was popular enough as a rental. I just remember hearing that it wasn't very good, especially for people that were fans of the comic book from Dark Horse. But now I'm like more and more curious. I love watching 90s, nostalgic action films. And I thought, okay, let's pop this in and see what I can, you know, discern from it. And I'll say this, it surprised me. It's maybe the worst and best that the 90s had to offer in my mind. It's probably one of the worst, produced Hollywood big budget. Well, $9 million is not a huge budget, but it's still pretty big for an action film in the 90s that didn't have, a lot of CG or anything. And at the same time, it's one of the most enjoyable bad movies I've ever seen. So, of course, it stars Pam Anderson and Tamora Morrison, who you probably would know better as Jango Fett and the clone troopers in the Star Wars canon. So, and then a bunch of other people like Udo Kier, Clint Howard, a lot of, you know, character actors from the 90s. Basically, if there's an action, stuntman who was in every action movie that you'd ever could imagine in the last 20 years, they were in this at some point, you know, either getting shot at or exploding, and it was just absolutely ridiculous. I will say one thing. The plot is easy enough to follow in that it's basically ripped off Casablanca note for note. It's almost the identical film. They just happen to do gender reversals on most of the characters, and instead of being set in, you know, the late 30s, early 40s Nazi-controlled Morocco, it is the last free city in America, and it's like the government is the Nazis, and at the same time, it's sort of a biker post-apocalyptic world. So it's kind of... It's a little bit on the cliched side, but that makes it all the more fun because it's just ridiculous. It's just an excuse to have lots of explosions and then every 10 seconds having, you know, a nipple slip out of Pamela Anderson because, ooh, everybody wants to see those big silicone boobs. Or at least they did, or they thought so in 1985, 96. Now, as far as the video quality goes, it's, from what I can read and what I can see, a big, big improvement on what the DVD would have been. It's pretty much pristine and crystal clear. So it's clear that this is a new master. This isn't something that they grabbed from, like, an old television master and then upscaled. It is directly from the film. You can see that. It's in surround sound with a full 5.1, you know, uncompressed audio track. And it's definitely a very bombastic, you know, 90s industrial rock, bit of grunge in there, dynamic track. So it's worth listening to. There's nothing else on the disc as far as special features go. It's a bare bones release, but I had a super fun time. And looking at it retail, in the States, it retails for about $5. In Canada, about $8. It's definitely worth it. You know, it's the price. I would have paid $8 for a rental in the 90s to watch it on VHS. And for $8, I get a Blu-ray that I can watch over and over and over again and laugh at with my friends. So it's definitely worth it. You know, it's not going to be maybe as close to the source material as you'd like, but it's still a fun 90s nostalgic action movie.
And that's the kind of show it has been here this week on Twig. Big thanks to Alex for putting together that review of Barbed Wire. I remember seeing that in theaters.
Oh, good God. You must have had a lot of fun or hated it.
I remember having a lot of fun, and I wasn't particularly attracted to Pamela Anderson. I was just in this was, it's a comic book movie phase, thus I have to see it. So this would have come out the same time around Spawn, which I want to say is, what, 97?
This was 90, well, it was recorded in 95, I believe it was 96, either in theaters or on home video.
Yeah, so I remember seeing this in my local theater back home, and I'm pretty sure it was me and like three other creepy guys seeing it. So
I got in trouble. I didn't say it in the review, but I got in trouble when I was like 12 years old because I didn't know at the time how to delete history on a computer. And I had left the computer connected to the internet all night downloading her porn tape. And I know it was, I think it was my mom that found it, but my dad was the one that had to have the conversation with me. And she thought, like, she must have thought that I was getting a big shit for it. And my dad's response was, he comes in, he goes, "So you downloaded porn?" I'm like, "No." And he goes, "Yeah, you did." And I went, "No." And he goes, "Yeah, you did." And I went, "No." And he goes, "Here's how you delete your history." And then he showed me and he goes, "All right, that's it." And then I heard him go downstairs. He goes, "All right, I talked with him."
That's fatherly duties.
Well, he's not going to stop it. He's just like, "Here's how you make it so we don't know you did it."
I remember once, because I lived with my grandmother, my grandfather growing up, I used to get the newest Playboys because they just never ID'd me when I used to buy porn. And I'd only buy certain issues. Here's the thing. I literally was that one weirdo who would buy the book for the articles. And I bought one of the Playboys specifically because it was at that time the 10-year history of the Laura Croft franchise. And it was this huge thing where they talked about character and the models and everything. And I'm like, all right, cool, Tomb Raider. This is before I discovered how much better Maxim was written, if you can believe that. So well, anyway.
What's the old saying? You buy Playboy for the articles, you buy Hustler for the spread. Hint, hint, wink, wink.
Oh, God.
And my grandfather's like, "Michael, I'm borrowing your magazine." And I was like, "You, just keep it."
One does not borrow a pornography.
You put it in a suitcase and throw it in the forest?
Yes. The forest porn, which we brought up on this show, I'm sure, at some point.
It works better for cities than it does where you live, though.
Yeah. Where it's the legend of forest porn. Anyway, guys, that's the kind of show it has been here on Twig. Coming up on the site, the long-awaited prototype, because hopefully I'm on March break with Blair this week, so I got tons of free time. Hopefully we're going to talk about 2019 and the disappointments so far. We've had Crackdown 3, we've had Anthem. People are talking about Kingdom Hearts 3, mixed results there. Some people love it, some people hated it.
Yeah, and then there's the optimism for the future. You know, there's changes within Nintendo, there's changes all around, and, you know, E3 is not going to be what it was last year with people leaving the show. Who knows what's going to happen? So we're going to probably, you know, what's the year been like so far, and what do we think it's going to be like moving on, right?
Exactly. So hopefully that'll be me, Alex, and Tristan later on this week. So be looking for that up on the site. Again, I am starring on Nerd to the Third Power. Last week we talked about Kingdom Hearts and the Smash Brothers franchise. This week we are recording our thoughts on Captain Marvel. So that should be up in like a week or so. I'm not 100% sure. Either way, if you follow me on social media, which is at Birdman Dodd, same on Instagram and Facebook, I post links to everything that I'm involved in. So be sure to be looking for that. What do we got coming up from you, Alex?
As the producer here, what I'll do when they launch that, when you post that, I'll put the link as well in one of our posts on the website. So people can go to This Week in Geek and link to it directly.
Exactly. So be looking out for that. I know, Tristan, you are kind of taking a brief creative hiatus.
I'm almost finished that hiatus. It's been a bit of a rough time for a few weeks, so it's been hard for me to really get my creative juices flowing, but I'm almost there. I've had some time to brainstorm. I've been doing some research on just how to be a better content creator. So that's kind of getting me back into the mood of things. So in the meantime, I've got a couple of reviews coming up. One is for Fear the Wolves, which is an unfortunately timed battle royale that came out pretty much the exact same time Apex Legends did. So you can kind of imagine how successful it's been. and Book of Unwritten Tales 2 coming up pretty soon. This is basically a point-and-click puzzle-solving adventure for the Switch that has a lot of references to gamer culture, and I love it. It's really good. So you get to hear more of that soon on the show.
Excellent stuff. All right, guys. So for This Week in Geek, we have been
Mr. Christopher.
Alex.
And I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd saying be cool, be kind, be careful, and as always, live free or die hard. We'll catch you guys again next week right here on ThisWeekInGeek.net.
Well, that's our show. All right, here's the deal. Every time you watch my show, I will send you $40.
Checks will not be honored.
You've been listening to This Week in Geek, your source for guaranteed nonsense or your money back. Tune in next week for more info and the most important things you didn't need to know. Check out our website at thisweekingeek.net and subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or any podcatcher. If you'd like to comment on this episode, head over to this episode's post at thisweekingeek.net and leave a comment through Facebook Connect. Follow us on Twitter at thisweekingeek.net and follow our Instagram at twig_official_podcast. Social media not your thing? Send us an email at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. We'll see you next time, and remember,
lower your shields and surrender your listenership.
Just when you think this show is terrible, something wonderful happens.
What?
It ends.
I have to go. Somewhere there is a crime happening.
Geico presents yet another voicemail from your roommate.
Hi. So, about the kitchen. Turns out, when there's a grease fire, you're not supposed to throw water on it. Who would have known, right? Anyways, the fire department is here, and it's totally cool. Give me a call back when you get a chance.
The Geico Insurance Agency could help keep your personal property protected, like if danger is your roommate's middle name. Visit geico.com to see how easy it is to switch and save on renter's insurance. Geico presents yet another voicemail from your roommate.
Hi, so about the kitchen. Turns out, when there's a grease fire, you're not supposed to throw water on it. Who would have known, right? Anyways, the fire department is here, and it's totally cool. Give me a call back when you get a chance.
The Geico Insurance Agency could help keep your personal property protected, like if danger is your roommate's middle name. Visit geico.com to see how easy it is to switch and save on renter's insurance.